You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth and Mrs. Kai Lovell. This is our Sunday Real Talk with today's filmmakers. Today we have the director of Waikiki, which is going to be the closing film of the 40th annual Hawaii International Film Festival with Chris Kahunahana. So we're also here today with Danielle Zalapany, who plays Kea, the lead in the film. This is a really fantastic film. You guys can go in the archives. Kai and I reviewed it. I'm going to start out, jump right into this with the director, Chris. Chris, this is such a, so many layers, so many things, so many different things we could discuss, but what really made me interested in, and by the way, congrats to both of you on HIFF. That's fantastic. I absolutely love you guys are the closing night film. Oh, so welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, so for you, Chris, as the writer-director, making Waikiki, why now?
Actually, I didn't make it now. Danny will know. We shot this in 2017, 2018. But coming out now, we thought the timing was right. I think a lot of the scenes that we discussed in the film, people weren't necessarily ready to hear or discuss. But for example, tourism. And, you know, after post-pandemic or during this pandemic, people saw the decline in tourism from 30,000 people a day to zero. And I think a lot of the local people had the opportunity to experience Waikiki. And I think these things made our film timely because without the people here, the fish return to the beaches, the people return, the locals return to Waikiki. And I think people are ready to start thinking about Waikiki and sustainability. And maybe there's a balance. Maybe there's a level that we haven't you thought of trying to reach it. Like, it's everyone knows it's been just crazy, but I think now people could think about it. So timing wise, you think the timing's right, and it just takes forever.
Wow.
To film.
Yes, of course, development or so. Okay, shooting it. I was just saying, I also remember I think like 2 years ago, I remember seeing on Vince's Facebook that he was talking about how he was working on something called Waikiki. So that's very interesting. The pandemic almost, would you almost go so far as to say, you wouldn't be glad about the pandemic, but as a filmmaker, is it almost kind of like a not cool? Do you get, see what I'm getting at? Like, it's almost helpful to your message, like where you can kind of step back and be like, God, this really sucks, but this helps our timing.
I think the timing, it helps people understand some of the themes we discuss in the film, like development and use of land or sustainability or over tourism. So I think these things, it works better now than I think it would have 2 years ago. But honestly, we didn't plan on coming out after a global pandemic. It kind of just happened that way. Danielle and I joked about it, but we had like, I think it was 17 days of principal photography and 2 years of pickups. so we kind of we initially shot the picture, and then there were so many things in the process of editing that I'm like, well, you know, Danny, this would be kind of cool if we did this, you know, and I think it would add to the character if we did this. And then so we just go out with sometimes with just myself, Danny, and our cinematographer, Ryan Miyamoto. And just go out and shoot pickups. And all of them, actually. I think we used a lot of the pickups in the final film.
I like that. I never was part of something that needed pickups, but I totally remembered being on as a producer, just being like, am I going to have to raise more money here? I'm just hoping the director doesn't want pickups. Okay, cool. He's done with that scene. That's really interesting how far apart. So that leads me into, were there any other, I want to jump a little bit into Kea, and I know Kai has some stuff to jump into about this. With Kea, were there any other potential stories besides this, besides it being about a girl or it being about her, or part of her journey? Like, what was there ever another kind of story that came across your mind that might have told the same thing or your same perspective?
Well, I've heard it said, and it was absolutely true in the case of this film, was that a film is authored three times, once in the writing, once in the shooting, and then finally in the edit. And the story changed a lot. I mean, it wasn't so... the story is Kea's story now, but at one time there was a lot more going on than just the simple story. And in editing, we realized that her story was the strongest storyline. So we lost some of the tangential storylines to strengthen the simple narrative. And I think by working on that simple narrative, it allowed us more opportunity to experiment with some of the surreal or thematic elements, the subjects which wasn't all there in the screenplay. So some of the subjects was created during post.
It's kind of our locations were kind of decided by the construction sites going on around us. Like, I remember one of the times we did a pickup, we did it in downtown, but the location in the course of a year had completely changed. So it's one of those things where I'm in awe of Chris and the post-production part, where, you know, in certain senses we couldn't go back and reshoot. So depending on what we shot and the time frame of it, that's what we were stuck with.
Yeah. That's I know the stage you're referencing for sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting in a sad, lame way.
No, go ahead, Devin. Sorry.
I was just going to say, this is Kai. I was going to say, that's like so Hawaii. That's like the most Waikiki thing I've ever heard. Is that if you were trying to return to the same location in a few months, it would be completely different because there's so much development, which I think speaks to the story as well, that there's just constant, constant development in Waikiki.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we set the story in Waikiki and also Kaka'ako because Kaka'ako represented a neighborhood that was in transition. And I mean, Danny can attest to it, but every time we go back, the neighborhood would be completely different. I would have to choose a new location because it'd be a building all of a sudden in our way. I mean, it's crazy. The skyline has completely changed since we shot the film. There was like not as a Whole Foods in one of the lots. There's like a, you know, 30-story tower in one of the lots. We weren't the quickest production, so I mean, it makes sense, but it just happened so fast. Yeah.
Yeah, the building that we shot in when we originally started, it was just an empty building. Like, they had just constructed it, but it was like the shell of the building. And then over the course of the year, I think it's a down to earth. I think there's a microbrewery. I might be confusing it with Ala Moana because everything happens so quickly. Yeah.
I'm so excited to talk to you guys. Aloha. Thank you so much for meeting with us today. Christopher, I really, really enjoyed this film. I really appreciate you sharing this story because we see so much like Hawaii Five-O, Jurassic Park, like Hawaii is so glamorous and like this, that, and the other. But to see a story that where like the central focal point is on a female lead, she's dealing with mental wellness issues. There's really every issue that we're having on the ground floor here. It's not the most glamorous tale. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that being told to the world. And I just also want to say thank you so much for keeping it so authentic to our culture and not having to overexplain the narrative to a broader audience. Mahalo nui loa. Thank you so much. Thank you. Waikiki is such an iconic name. Did you, if I'm correct, you're from Oahu, yeah?
Yes. I'm from Waimanalo.
Oh, okay. Did you need to leave Hawaii in order to come home and tell this story? Like, what was that process for you?
I did, but I don't know if it was necessary, but it just felt like something that I should be doing. I moved out of Hawaii right during college. because there wasn't actually a film school when I started making film. So I kind of attended University of Hawaii under a strapped together degree, independent study where I had a little bit of creative writing through the English department. Then I took some directing and acting courses through the theater department and some production courses through the communications department. So I kind of felt that I didn't have an opportunity to learn film here, and I thought it'd be easier to make it elsewhere. I was wrong. I went initially to San Francisco, and in San Francisco, I soon realized it wasn't really a film town either. It was more of a music focused town. So I kind of got into that, which led me to New York and art and promotion. But I always had wanted to make film. That was the ultimate goal. And each of my moves, I thought I could get closer to making film. Yeah. But then when I was away in New York, curating art shows for San Francisco and film programs for an independent film festival I was running in Honolulu. At the time, I'd send films back to Honolulu and screen it. There was an opportunity for us to open up a venue. And the reason we opened the venue is because at that time, a lot of the cineplexes were closing, so all the movie houses were closing. So there was less opportunity for us to screen films that we were bringing from global films. And so we kind of thought, in order to guarantee us a place to screen films, we'd open a venue in Chinatown. And thus my whole foray into that neighborhood. And I learned a lot from that experience, running a venue in Chinatown at that time.
Okay.
Go
ahead, Paul. No, go.
Chris, was that like the Elephant Cafe, or like when Don Brown was doing that, or?
I remember Don Brown's cafe. I actually opened a venue called Next Door. It was the initial screening home of Cinema Paradise Independent Film Festival. And, you know, soon we realized while running the film festival that the landlord was very happy with what we were doing in the neighborhood. At that time, it's very sketchy at that time, and it's still pretty sketchy. But it was an abandoned space, and we just decided to gut it and renovate it. And she was very happy, and she could see the potential in having people come to the neighborhood. And so we kind of got stuck down there for 10 years. And in order to make this film, I had to actually sell the venue. Because running a venue just was taking up all my time, and I wasn't getting any closer to making film. And so I decided in that interest, I just should sell the venue.
Oh, wow. That's such a sacrifice for you. And look what you created. Thank you so much. And thank you for showing Chinatown as she is too, because we're on the island, like Paul and I are from Kauai, you know, and when you go to town, you go to Chinatown, you need to come home with Manapulas or else never mind coming home. And it's a different type of a place nowadays. It's definitely much more cleaned up than it used to be in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. Far more artistic now. There's, like fancy shops in Chinatown. I was tripping on that the last time I was there. But there's definitely still that element going like into Kaka'ako, as you're saying, like the newness, but still there's like that homelessness. There's so many people who are displaced, and it's such a challenge because so many of those people are local people. And when we have things like the Hawaiian Homes Act, and then there's things going on the Mauna, and there's all these different moving parts in Hawaii to tell a story like you told, with the island really being a cast member as well. I greatly appreciated that. Can I ask Danielle a question, please?
Yeah, fire away.
Hi, Danielle. I wanted to ask you, with your process approaching Kea, was it important to you to have Kea grow organically and just let her sort of unfold as time was going by? Or did you feel like when you first took a look at the character that you immediately knew her and knew exactly where you were going with this and how to pull
good question
for that character?
Well, honestly, it all came down to the story that we were trying to tell. If you are born and raised here, and the thing is, like, I spent a lot of time in Chinatown, just the story that we were trying to tell, it's very easy to know what the through line is, because we didn't necessarily shoot in sequence. So it wasn't an organic evolution. It was more, before we were going to shoot, and I really appreciated this, Chris would, you know, talk about what we were going to do. He was a very hands-on director. He wanted to make sure everybody knew that we were going to be on the same page for that day. But the only thing I can say is it's the through line. You know, just knowing that it, this overall vision is what we're trying to show. And everything else you just take day by day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was lucky to work with Danielle and the rest of the crew. I mean, they were so willing to veer off of the screenplay, because some of the stuff we on the screenplay, we never actually got around to shooting. And a lot of it, we kind of improvised. And they were, Danielle's such an excellent actress that, you know, I just tell her what we're doing and she's like, I got it. And then it was like, okay, so these are your lines. She's like, yeah, I know. Pretty much, she knew the character so well at some point that I mean, if you look at what I've given, like, okay, so you and him, you guys are here, and then they could kind of just, you know, improvise their lines a lot of the time. I mean, I just give them suggestions and say, okay, this is the situation. Is where you guys, this is where you came from, and this is where you guys are going to end up, and kind of let them play with it. And luckily, our crew was pretty flexible and nimble also, so they could kind of just follow along. Like, I think some of our scenes we shot, like quickly, right? Like, we didn't really have much setup. Like, I think we lost the scene one day. We lost the location last minute, and then we dived over to, we just dived over to another location, and Daddy said, I think I'm ready for this scene. And I'm like, you can tell him what happened. But she basically said, let's do this one. I'm like, okay, sure. And then Danny can tell you.
I think also, too, like that was such a brilliant thing on Chris's part, where he employed all local people, or not all, but for the majority, everyone was from Hawaii. You know, so he would set up a scene, we'd know where we were going, and you already are kind of in that mindset, you know, because it's hard to explain. I don't think I'll ever work on anything like this again. You know, I'm born and raised in Kaneohe. Chris is from Waimanalo. Even the guy that plays my boyfriend, he's from Effa Beach. So it's, you know, everybody is very much from Hawaii. And then we all kind of, at one point, had our lives central in Chinatown. I just think the smartest thing he could have done was employ locals to tell a local story.
Well, I
it definitely makes it easier.
Yeah.
As a set of eyes watching it, it felt so authentic. Like, I know that you guys know what I mean by this. You know, you created this piece of art. Like, you don't see yourself on film often. And when you do see yourself on film, it's like that stereotypical role in Hawaii, you know? And especially like with Kea, like you do not see Kea on film. You'll see her maybe on like Channel 2 News for like 5 minutes or at most. But you're never going to see her on this like platform. And it was just so amazing to feel the authenticity as a viewer. So I just want to thank you for that, because I think it's going to do a lot of good. You know, the young girls need to see that. Like, our young women in Hawaii need to see that and share their story and know that they're not alone and dealing with mental health issues on their own or having domestic violence challenges. And then, too, just speaking to the financial issues, like, she's a hard worker. And, you know, Kea's not homeless. She has a van. Like, she's killing it at this life. You know, she's not homeless. You know, she's just trying really hard to get where she's going. And I don't really think people understand that if you've never lived in Hawaii, like having a van is like a huge, huge, like you're doing really great in comparison to having a tent on the beach. Because there's a difference between that level of homelessness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And again, like,
even, Go ahead, Danny. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to, you know, flatter you or pay homage to you some more.
Never mind.
I really do think he wrote such an amazing character or a person to play, because, you know, I've done stuff that have come to the islands, and it's the running joke of like, oh, it's so who are you playing, the coffee girl?
Doesn't that just kill you?
Like it's nice because he wrote just a fully fleshed out three-dimensional person of you know, some days you're strong, some days you're not, some days are easy, some days are really hard, and it's just like, you know, how are you going to keep going forward?
It's awesome.
She wasn't difficult to write. I mean, it's like there's a lot of different people in that character that I knew, like from past relationships to people that I associated with, to family members, to cousins, to you know, she was easy. It's like I saw her. She was the clearest character that I through the whole screenplay. Everybody else I kind of had to base on somebody, but that one, she didn't present any issues with the writing. And then when I met Danny, and I thought, oh man, she's gonna kill this role, and she more than killed it. I mean, she did such an amazing job. It's hard to see anybody else having played that role. It's such a natural fit for her to do that part. That I can't see them separated now, but when I was writing it, the writing came pretty easy for her, for that character.
Yeah, did you have a, we don't make it a big deal, but now it's just such a big deal in the world, which we understand why, but I'm always interested now in the males telling a female story and the females telling a male story, and I get it, I'm all down with that, we need all voices, etc., but I was kind of interested in what, without being personal, like, was there ever, like, kind of, not a challenge argument, but just kind of a, like, you are a guy telling a female story. Like, I'm always interested in that.
Actually, no, because so many of the crew members and producers are female. Like, from the producers to the, one of my editors to, it's like the whole crew is filled with females. So it kind of, you know, if I was doing something that I didn't feel like correct, they would just check me like immediately. But I think for most part, everyone kind of got the character, and it felt like, I mean, I didn't think about it in terms of, I mean, I saw her as Kea, female Kea, but the character is like a lot of different people's experience here, like, you know, the homelessness, mental health issues, those types of issues. I mean, it's everybody feels those things. Poverty and struggle, those things are, I think, more universal than just that particular character.
Can I ask you, Danielle, how long have you been, or like, how long have you had this passion for storytelling, using like this medium as your art? Like, have you been acting your whole life?
No, actually, I started at a theater in Chinatown. Called Kuma Kahua, and they're dedicated to telling, I believe their mission statement is telling stories for Hawaii's people, by Hawaii's people, about Hawaii's people, and it's through there that I actually learned a lot about my culture, my Hawaiian culture, and I honestly never really thought of branching out into film. Chris actually found me at Kuma Kahua. I got a phone call from the box office manager saying that somebody was asking for my contact info, and it was Chris. And so I decided to, you know, take a chance. We went to go meet for coffee, and I think we spent like 2 hours talking. And... and to me, it was a no-brainer, you know, because it was unlike anything I had ever been approached with, where, you know, it's he's focused on telling everything that's going on now, but also looking to the past, because that's a, you know, for me personally, I think you need to know where you came from in order to know where you are and know where you're going. And the fact that he was going to center it around the female, and I thought Chris's vision was incredibly respectful. You know, he's, everyone in Hawaii has ties to the kupuna, which is why I, another part that I loved about it too was grandma was also included. You know, I remember my grandmother very well. I spent many times, like she, my papa used to watch my brother and I while my parents were busy working, because we were a two income household, because that was the only way that, you know, you can survive in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think that there's no accident. Like, you started out in the theater telling stories about Hawaii and their people, and then you were found for this role because it's always meant to be your role. And it's such an ode to your kupuna. It was probably your kupuna helping you. That's so awesome. I love that story.
Yeah,
that was your first film role?
First lead.
Wow.
Like, I had done, like, little bits and stuff, but it's the girl that's bringing coffee, or the girl that's, you know, can I take your order or something like that. But this is the first time somebody had trusted me with a lead role.
Wow. I mean, you really, first of all, you killed it. I don't, it's okay if you didn't hear our review, but I was just,
I've told Chris,
you know, I had a very hard time. I've told Vince and I've told Connie, I had a very hard time with this film. And partially was because the opening of what goes on with your character. So it was kind of like when it opened up, it was just like you were so authentic, and it was so great, the authenticity that you guys had. So I was like, stop, start. And to me, that means the film's better, like if you're not able to deal with it. So I just wanted to really give kudos to you with you on the air of just the vulnerability you were willing to give. I really commend.
Thank you.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, whatever, yeah. Uncle. Okay, you, sorry, that's like a set thing. Everybody was uncle, every girl was auntie. So no. I feel like if I call him uncle, it's not because he's older or anything. It's more just like a...
it's a term of respect.
I did wonder without you guys having to say your specific age, I was wondering about what era of Waikiki was lost for you. Like the way Kai and I can just automatically, because we're 3 months apart, say it's 90s. We can't stand that all the movie theaters are gone. And then I meet people that are like, when was there movie theaters in Waikiki? So for you guys, was there something, was it very similar eras, or where was it kind of like you just had to stick to the same feeling of the lost era? Oh, okay. So it's similar eras. Okay.
Well, I can't speak for Danny, but I mean, I definitely went to the Kuhio Theater, Waikiki 3. I saw Batman, you know, I saw so many great, some Cinerama. I saw Star Wars. So yeah, toys changed a lot since then.
Don't be bringing up the video twins. That's going to make me cry more than your film.
I just wanted to add this to Christopher and Danielle. Like, I work in I work in mental wellness and like with substance abuse and with like homelessness here on Kauai, and we try to help people find transitional housing and get off of drugs, and primarily working with women with children. And I don't know if that was one of the reasons why Kea really touched me so much, but I just want to thank you, Chris, for writing her so honestly. And as we were just sort of like, I don't want to just be like so just awestruck by your Teddy. I'm sorry, I know it's like can be a little bit overwhelming when people are just like, you're amazing, you're amazing, you're amazing. But I do just want to say like everything from like when you were just so clear and pure when you're with a Keiki in the Kula, like how that was just like your happy place, and then how everything else was just a little dismantled because of it being like in my heart, like a representation of how Hawaii is at this point. I just saw the nuances in your performance. And so I really, really thank you for that. And thank you for creating this piece of art for people to be able to look to in their different times and journeys.
How do you feel, Danielle, about you guys are going to be closing the 40th HIF? So you're going to be up on that big screen for HIF, the festival that represents the islands and all the cultures that bring films there. How did you feel the first time you got that news?
I was incredibly happy for everyone that had a hand in this film. Like, this is a celebration of years of work, you know, because it's that whole saying of it takes a village. I mean, you would not believe how many people, I mean, you mentioned Vince. I think there are a couple of people that are going to be at HIF also Mitchell Burns, I met him on Waikiki. He was with us in the crew. To me, it's a celebration for everyone. Because it's like, you know, everybody worked so hard on this project, and it's time to bring it home.
Oh yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well,
HIF's like our home, and a lot of our relationships, myself personally, it's like a lot of my film influences came from HIF. So to be able to be my feature as a closing night film is a huge honor, and I'm really excited about it. Like Danny said, it's like get to celebrate everybody's efforts, and it's like I'm really excited about that opportunity to see everybody get to see the film together and celebrate their work. I think that's going to be highlight of this year for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic, because what I loved so much about Well, for me, the backstory of this movie was that when I had a just piece of crap film in HIF, when I was getting my badge, Connie was the volunteer who gave me my badge. And I just remember, like, I just thought this is so, like, you know, you're at your first film festival, and I had just graduated film school, and it's just like, wow, you're in HIF. And so I just thought, for me, it was just a nice full circle of like that kind of, I think so many filmmakers don't pay attention to, like, you never know who you'll meet or be cool to everybody and not to see what you can get out of it. But just kind of like, I would have never thought like 20 years later, there was a film I wanted to cover, and it has the historical aspect of you being the first director for your Native Hawaiian film feature, and to just be like, wow, you know, it just happened to be somebody who was giving me my badge. So that was kind of a bizarre thing to sit and think about. I also wanted to let you know, Danielle, that your guys' work also too, and this goes into a question about, kind of leaks into, I'm wondering about you as an actress, and it ties into Chris as a director. But I really felt like this was like a 70s film. I don't know if that's specifically where you were going, Chris or Danielle, I'm not being presumptuous, but if you've like studied a lot of 70s film, but they're really famous for like having a lead character that the whole world goes on without them. They don't change, but everything around them seems to change. So Chris or Danielle, did you have any kind of 70s film thing going on, or was that just something that it's just in there and off in the left field?
I mean, I definitely love, I think the 70s, late 60s is the best film, time for film in America. So I think some of my favorite films are from that period. Midnight Cowboy was a huge influence I'd say yeah. I'd say yes. But I don't think it was, I didn't intend it to feel like a 70s film. I think it's just the films that, stylistically, it's just the types of films I like. Apocalypse Now, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the, I didn't go into it with a 70s film vibe. I thought that was kind of the way life happens here. Like I said, I live in Kaneohe. The only time I realize something's really different is when I do go down to Waikiki or Ala Moana or even Kaka'ako. You know, it's weird. There's like these little pockets of time on Oahu where, you know, if you take the drive out to North Shore, but you go the Kamehameha Highway route, everything is still the same. Like, it's still country. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll still drive past Kualoa, you know, You got the ocean on one side, you got the buildings on the other. And then when you go to town, that's when you realize, oh my gosh, everything has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I thought that was what the film showed, is everybody has their life, but things are happening around you. And you may be so wrapped up in your life, you don't notice it until you look up and you realize, oh my God, there's a down to earth there. Or mm-hmm. When did a parking garage get constructed where that shopping center used to be? Like, it's, that was the feeling that I had.
So just rolling with the natural. Kai, do you have anything to say on this or any further, or another question that spawned for you?
If there's like one message you would like the viewer to take away from the film, what would it be?
Go ahead, Ben.
I think people should take away that life in Hawaii is beautiful, but it's also hard. It's not as easy to live in paradise as people might think.
Mm-hmm. Well, personally, I mean, I hope that the film serves as like a critique against the destruction of nature and culture. And it's like Hawaiians are intrinsically tied to the land. The land and Hawaiians are, you know, you can't separate them. If you know, if you take the land away from Hawaiians, you know, you get all these problems. There's like mental health issues and such. So I think as the world starts recognizing indigenous people's rights to the land and indigenous people are invigorated to stand up for the land, I think we have to return to that and recognize indigenous cultures and connection to the land, or else we're all screwed, basically. You know, no land, no people. Well, I think, yeah, Danny, there's like I think the message of the film was what she was teaching in that classroom. You know, well, that's
all that.
Yeah. Hele Ikaina.
Yeah.
Ikawake Kanaka.
Kanaka.
Yeah. The land is the chief and the people are its servants.
Yeah. I agree. Well, I think that's what this film does too, is it holds a mirror up to the people that live here, a sort of accountability. Because I did listen to your guys' podcast. And I think you guys talked about the term holy.
Yes.
Where it's more of a mindset. It's not so much a person, it's a mindset. And mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. You know, because building into the Kili Kaina Sekua Kanaka, it's, you know, a unified responsibility to take care of the land. It's not just and one person, it should be everyone. Like, if you think some place is your home, then you should take care of it.
Absolutely. Right?
And so it's so strange when people build walls and bridges and walls and all these things. And oh my goodness, it's so strange.
No, yeah. I really, so No, you got, that's, I want to, I, we always kind of close out with some of the similar questions, but today I'll shorten them up, which I'm just interested in. I can ask Danielle, and then the other one I'll ask Chris. And this is just kind of like fun way that I've liked to end the show for like the last 5 years. As an actress, Danielle, is there a genre or story that you like absolutely want to do and tell before like your time not acting is up, or you know what I mean? Like just you want to play this character, this role. Do you have something like that?
I want to continue telling stories from Hawaii, honestly. That was it's going to be incredibly hard to top this, this experience. But I think it's because so much of my life was invested in Waikiki and still is. So for right now, that's where I am.
Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, hey, anytime we're remotely near or where we want to be, that's a tremendous plus. Chris, same question for you. As a director, is there a set story or you want to make a big, huge Avengers film before you have to hang up the camera?
No, I just want to continue contributing to the conversation. And I, you know, like genre wise, I kind of, I'm open. I mean, I love drama. I love sci-fi. I'm working on a sci-fi screenplay currently.
What?
Hopefully.
Awesome.
Yeah, I like
that's sci-fi. Great.
It allows you to discuss themes that aren't so easily discussed. You know?
Well, that's a great point. Because people assume it like it's a different world, right? So you can say this or that and, that's a great observation.
I mean, the other way to do this with comedy, but I don't, you know, I'm not a comedy director. I don't, my timing's way off. So I think sci-fi was something I can, I'm more interested in sci-fi.
No, I think you're pretty funny.
Okay.
I do too, but nobody else seems to think so.
No, I mean, like, I think
we all know
that's the beauty of. Yeah, I think that's the beauty of Hawaii. Like, there's so many things here. Like, you can, I mean, there is comedy, there is drama, there's even thriller and horror, like scary stories.
And even like our legends, and they could be considered sci-fi too if you just sort of put it in another narrative or something like that. But I'm so excited to hear that you want to continue to tell the story. So Hawaii, Danielle, thank you so much. That's so awesome. Be yourself. Thank you.
I'm just going to close with saying thank you guys again. It was a really special honor to do this and to have you guys on and to just know everything that it's going to do. I think it's going for the moon. So I think it's just going to go everywhere and I can't wait to hear about that. So Kai, if you have anything you want to wrap up with, feel free.
It's just my pleasure to meet you guys. Thank you so much for coming on today. And I hope that it's just a huge success and everybody gets to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Mahalo nui.
Thank you. Thank you guys for inviting us on.
Yeah,
you're so welcome, man. Peace, aloha, and definitely, of course, safety to all of you and yours during these crazy, trying times.
Thank you. Be safe.
Thank you. Right.
Aloha.
Okay. Aloha. Aloha.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for Kai and I. We thank you for joining us. You know my motto, whether it's morning, afternoon, evening, or whatever other time of crazy COVID day you found, make sure and watch a good movie.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.